All right, folks. Thanks a lot for coming. Welcome to People's Rights. And we're going to have a marvelous speaker today, one of our own, Mr. Ira Bershotsky. And he's worked with Advisor Metals for a long, long time. And there you go. So he owns it. So advisormetals.com, you can go and visit Ira's website. So Ira's going to be talking to us today about investment into precious metals and also a bit about our economy in these troubled times. But before I bring Ira up, I wanted to tell you about a couple things that are going on. Number one, I wanted to let everybody know there's a global activist movement going on right now. It's called the Global Walkout on Tyranny. And every week they introduce a new step, a new way to fight the New World Order. So check out Global Walkout on Tyranny. And we're up to step 12 now. So the steps are things like paying cash. Why? Because the bad guys are trying to impose a digital currency on us and control everything we buy and sell. So let's just thwart that by paying cash. And also vote with your dollars. Don't invest your dollars in companies and at places that are supporting this, these tyrannical regimes and supporting these evil agendas that we all know so much about. Boycott. Yeah, exactly. So we're talking about a boycott of the New World Order, really. And there's 12 steps so far. They're all very inventive and ingenious ways that we can easily fight the New World Order. And this is going on all over the world. So it was started by a lady in Australia, and now it's worldwide, and it's growing fast. So check out the Global Walkout on Tyranny. So another little announcement I wanted to tell you all about is a good friend of mine was a member of the Oath Keepers for quite a long time. He was the editor-in-chief of their website and so forth. His name is Elias, and he's one of my personal mentors. And Elias has just written a book, and it's called Oath Keepers Targeted Red. So the Oath Keepers, if you don't know this, are one of the primary groups that the January 6th committee has targeted. So if you don't know what the Oath Keepers are about, and you don't know much about what's going on January 6th with them and what they're being accused of, check out this book, because Elias is a fantastic writer. And it's a very interesting book. And believe it or not, I'm even mentioned in the book. So it's called Oath Keepers Targeted Red. That's what you look up on Amazon. It's available now. So I brought another book with me today. This is an older book written by another friend of mine. It's called Solving 9/11. And this book, my friend Christopher Bolin, really exposes the perpetrators and names names behind 9/11. So I'll leave it on the table for anyone that wants to look at it. But right now, I'd like to bring up to the microphone Mr. Ira Bershotsky and give us a talk today, Ira, and tell us what we do in these troubled economic times. Thanks.
Thank you, Adam.
Hello. Hi.
Hi. Wow.
I'd like to thank everyone for coming. Topics today, I'm going to talk macroeconomics, microeconomics, the stock market, precious metals, digital currency. If I miss any of those, let me know. I'm an older guy, and you know, it just goes right up. So one of the first things that may be coming to your mind is that, well, this is great. I don't know a lot about these topics, and we're in the same boat. Either do I. So we're there together. So Adam was introducing me. I've got 42 years experience in the business world. I have an MBA in finance, you know, wahoo. And I have 3 decades experience as an institutional equities trader. So I was doing that for a long time. Then I segued into precious metals. For half of the time that I was in institutional equities, I had my own broker dealer, and now I have my own precious metals firm. So one of the questions that comes up is, does the stock market lead the economy? Well, let's go down memory lane and find out. John would probably know like I do. So let's start 50 years ago, back January of 1973. The Dow Jones hit a high of 1,051. Yeah, that was it, 1,051. Now it's like 33,000. Okay, usually, historically, from what I've seen and what's been written, stock market leads the economy about 8-9 months. Give or take, you know, it's a guideline. So January of 1973, the Dow hits an all-time high. What happened about 8-9 months later? Arab oil embargo. And so in the meantime, those 9 months, the stock market's going down, 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 right? And then, boom, recession. So recession lasts maybe a couple of years, and the stock market bottomed in the middle of 1975. What happened a few months later? Boom, 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 boom. Stock market goes up. The economy goes up. Okay, let's advance a few more years. 1979. Okay, now the stock market's chugging along, doing okay. What happened again? Arab oil embargo. You know, you call it embargo or whatever you want, shortage of oil. In the meantime, the tankers are sitting off the coast, you know, just waiting to be unloaded. So, the stock market is starting to tank because it peaked. Then you got into the 1980-1982 recession. That was the real recession. The 80-89 was the great, 2008 to 2009, they're calling that the Great Recession. Wrong. 1980-82 was the Great Recession. It was very close to a depression because you had 21.5% short-term interest rates, 12% inflation, 12% mortgage rates. Companies were going out of business. Steel was being outsourced overseas. Garment manufacturing was being outsourced overseas. I mean, it was really, really bad. And if I can just go back a moment to 1975, what made that recession different than previous post-World War II recessions? Usually a recession up until then, you know, the Federal Reserve would raise interest rates, and then auto production would go down, appliance production would go down, housing would go down, and it was mostly blue-collar jobs. It was the first post-World War II recession where white-collar people got laid off. So that was, things were starting to change then. Okay, so now we're back to 80-82. So you had the high interest rates, you had the inflation, and stock market had peaked 79, and then boom, a few months later you have recession. Okay, so what happens? A couple of years, middle of 1982, I mean, it was August of 1982, stock market bottomed, and boom, it went up. And in one day it hit a record, it just moved up more than any other record. In fact, 50 million shares traded in one day in August. I think it was August 14th or August 11th, whatever it was. And you know, now hundreds of millions, if not billions, of shares trade every day. But back then, people were called floor traders on the New York Stock Exchange were called back because from vacation because they had to do 50 million share a day. It wasn't as automated as it was today. So what happened? The stock market bottomed, and then what happened in 1983? Boom! Wow, the economy's starting to boom again. So the economy's chugging along, doing real great. What happened in 1987? Okay, October of 87, Black Monday. The Dow Jones drops 23% in one day, but it actually dropped the Friday before it had dropped. I don't know how many percent. So you're talking, what usually happens over months happened in 2 days, like a 30% drop, right? And then it kind of bottomed then, and then it started to move up, right? But what happened like 18 months later? So like I said, 8-9 months is kind of a guideline. You had the 1989, 1990, SNL crisis, savings and loans. You remember back oil dropped, so back in Texas, the that's all imploding. Commercial real estate imploded, right? So then a few months later, what happened? The economy starts to move up again. The stock market moved up. Okay, let's jump ahead to the year 2000, right? You have here's 1997. Now, when the Dow Jones goes down 20% or more, it's considered a bear market. In 1997, in the fall, you had long-term capital management. It was kind of a hedge fund, and they went belly up, and the stock market and the Thai baht, the currency was dropping, everything was dropping. So what happened? The Dow Jones went down in October of that year, 19.9%. Didn't hit 20%, right? Bill Clinton can't have a bear market, right? The plunge protection team, which you may have heard of from the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, came in and Goldman Sachs, probably whomever, and moved it higher. So now we're moving a little bit ahead. That was just kind of like a little of an aside. So March of the year 2000, what do we have? Stock market peak, right? The NASDAQ, right, went over 5,000 at that time. So you have a stock market peak, and that's March of 2000. What happened like 9 months later? Recession. Ta-da! So the stock market is dropping during that whole time. So again, you're having a recession. And then what happened in July of 2002? Boom, in one day, that one day percentage move that you had in August of 82, this thing went much more than that. And then the economy started to move again all the way through what year? 2006, 2007, 2008. So what happened? 2007, the stock market tops out. And you had Lehman Brothers go bankrupt and Bear Stearns go bankrupt. And then what did you have a few months later? Recession. Then that went through to about a couple of years, which is about what they normally last. Then March of 2009, what happened? Stock market bottoms, starts to go up, and the economy went up about a year or so later. 2010, 2011, it started to go higher. Then we move along again, and we're in 2020. March 2020, stock market drops 20-30%, but I don't know what happened then. We kind of in a recession, kind of weren't. And then move forward to today. So what are we seeing now? Now don't get gaslighted, whatever it is. So we had two down quarters in a row of economic output. That is a recession by any definition. Don't let the journalists, don't let the Democrats tell you, nah, it's not a real recession. It is. So what happened though, December of 2021, stock market peaked. It's going lower. What happened 8-9 months later? Boom, recession, two down quarters in a row. But of course the stock market doesn't lead by 8-9 months, right? So of course it does. So then the stock market bottomed. It bottomed. It bottomed in September, just a couple of months ago, September 2022. So it's moved up now for a couple of months. And the last quarter, the GDP went up 2.6%. 2.6%. BS. Why? Because most of that was net exports by the government, selling military equipment to Ukraine and doing all sorts of other fun things. You take that out, take the government exports out, and flat, not much. So what does that mean? The stock market's been up 2 months in a row. Does that mean by next summer that the economy, that we'll be in a recession now for the next 7-8 months, and then will the economy start to move higher? Very possibly. So just look at the prices of the Dow Jones and see, you know, what happens if it keeps going higher and the economy is going down. And what you're seeing is many of the prognosticators, you know, even JP Morgan, they're saying we're going to have a recession in the middle of 2023. No, that's going to be the bottom, because the financial people, especially the financial writers, they don't know squat. I mean, ask anyone of these who've been around for 40 years, you probably count them on one hand. I mean, they just haven't been there. They just don't know, and they're just parroting whatever they hear from the Democrats or whomever. So just watch that we're in the recession and could very well be bottoming in several months. So that's my little historical stock market chat. So macroeconomics. What is macroeconomics? Anyone? Bueller? No. So I love to say that. So macroeconomics is mostly fiscal and monetary policy. So what is fiscal and monetary policy? Fiscal policy is taxing and spending. And that's what mostly the Congress controls. Monetary policy is what the Federal Reserve controls. They either print money, don't print money, or what have you. And they control the interest rates. They control the reserve requirement, what banks have to have on in reserve. So if $100 of checking deposits come in, the bank has to have, I think now, about $10 on reserve. And then they multiply it. They can loan out the other 90. Let me get back to the 80s for a moment as I'm jumping around. I'm an old guy, you know, just trying to do what I can. So people have heard of the Reagan tax cuts, right? 1982. That's why you had all the deficits in the 1980s, because Reagan did all these tax cuts. It favored the rich and there wasn't money and everything went down. Don't be gaslit again. Because back then, if you looked at today, the statistical abstract of the United States, which you had to go to a bookstore back then to get it, but now you can find it in online. Between 1982, 1983, and 1989, the revenues of the federal government went up every year. So people go, oh, favored the rich. Let me tell you something. I was working back then, and I was probably in one of the bottom two federal tax brackets. Once the 30% across the board tax cut passed, I'm looking at my paycheck. It went up. I got a raise, right? And I'm in one of the bottom tax brackets. This was great. So it was the spending. Reagan spent $1 trillion to defeat communism, to defeat the Soviet Union without firing a shot, which he did. And that's where the deficits came from. So the revenues actually went up. You cut taxes, the revenues go up. In 1989, the capital gains tax was cut. That's when people sell their stocks or houses, whatever, at a profit, and they have to pay the capital gains. At that time, I believe the capital gains rate was pretty similar to what you pay in taxes, the regular income tax rate. So they cut it down to like 20%, whatever it was. And of course, the Democrats in Congress are going, the revenue is going to go down. This is horrible. What happened? The revenue went up. The stock market went up. So, you know, that's you have to see how that works. So getting back to macroeconomics, what the Federal Reserve controls is the monetary part. The fiscal part is what the Congress controls, and that's mostly what you see. And right now, the Federal Reserve, you know, is raising the interest rates. They're way behind the curve. You know, Janet Yellen is the Treasury Secretary. She used to be the head of the Federal Reserve. She's a boob. I mean, I don't care if she has a PhD that she used to teach at Berkeley. She used to be head of the Federal Reserve. Now she's head of the Treasury. And there's a quote somewhere, you can probably find it on the internet somewhere, in 2006 when she was head of the Federal Reserve or vice chair, whatever she was at the time. So, Ms. Yellen, what do you think of the housing market? Well, I don't see a problem with the housing market. Boom! Housing crashes. And what happened a year and a half ago? Ms. Yellen, what do you see? Treasury Secretary Yellen, what do you see about inflation? Transitory. Won't last very long. Sorry, don't worry about it. And way to go again, Janet. All right. And this woman is in government stuff, and she's what's called a Keynesian. Keynesian economics was back from the 1930s or wherever it was, and it was like the government can solve all the problems. You know, you print the money or whatever it is. And she's a Keynesian. She was taught by Keynesian professors, and Keynesian economics just doesn't work. But there she is in all these policy positions. Microeconomics is how behavior of individuals are affected by the macro part, like the taxation, spending, that sort of thing. So in California now, we're getting the $350 or $700, whatever it is, you know, to fight the inflation. So the microeconomic people look at it and go, well, what's the behavior? It's like behavioral finance. What are people doing with the money? Are they saving it? Are they spending it? What are they doing it? So that's a large part of micro economics as far as that goes. Digital currency. Now, when a statement comes out from a government entity, you have to look at the words very, very carefully, because it's planned, it's scripted, every single word has meaning. Yes. And if you looked at the announcement from the Federal Reserve, they have this proof of concept now for the digital currency. Because remember, Janet Yellen wanted to do $600 or more if you moved 600, transacted $600 or more in your bank account, then that was going to be flagged by the federal government, and they were going to go, "Well, what's going on? We're going to follow track that." That didn't work. So now the Federal Reserve Bank of New York is having this proof of concept, I think, with 12 financial institutions, everything from MasterCard to the major banks, and they're going to see how the concept's going to work. And if you look down the last couple of sentences, it says, "This is only a proof of concept. The banks are not required to do anything regardless of what happens with the proof of concept." I call BS on that. Why? Because they can, in the old days, right, in the Kennedy era, they use the word jawboning, right? Because they can jawbone them and say, "Look, if you don't adopt this digital currency, this is what's going to happen to you, or you'll be denied this Federal Reserve perk or whatever it is." So you really have to watch what they say very, very carefully. So that's a lot of the basic background. Precious metals. So again, I really don't know. I tell my customers I really don't know a lot about it, but I do what I can. So going back history again, people go, "Why gold? Why silver?" And that's really what I ask them when they have an inquiry. The first questions I always ask to start the conversation, because it's about them. I'm not a salesman-y person. I don't say, "Oh, you got to buy it. Well, gold's going to be $5,000 an ounce 6 months." I have no idea. My crystal ball's in the drawer. I have no idea what it's going to do. But I just look back historically what it does. So I always ask people, "Why precious metals? What are you hoping gold and silver can do for you?" And that opens the conversation. I let them talk, and I let them see what they can do, and I guide them from there. So if you look, you can take any time period for precious metals, especially gold. But I look at the year 2000, the dot-com boom, which I touched upon a little earlier. And I go, "Well, you know, what has the Dow Jones done in the last 22 years? And it's just about doubled. Actually, a little more than that. Went from 17,000 to 36,000. And now it's down to 33. So let's say it doubled, to use a round number. What did gold do during that time? It was up 4.5 times. Well, the stock market was up twice. And between 2008 and 2011, when the stock market was crashing, gold and silver each doubled in price. And that's what it does. It's there to hedge your portfolio. It's there, if you want to call it, protection, or that's what it does. And there was a study done, probably some salesman-y company did it, in 2008, that if you had 30% of your investment portfolio in precious metals, you didn't go down 40%, you came out even. So, you know, now the salesman-y people are banding about, put 30% in there, and, you know, I look at it, you put in what works for you. It could be 5%, it could be 50%. People go, you know, to me, "Well, what percentage do you have?" And I go, "I'm in a different place than you are. I'm growing a business. I've got 2 teenagers. You know, I mean, you know, one's in college. I mean, it's different from where a lot of the people are." And when I ask them, I go, "You know, what's your age? What's your risk level? What's your holding period? You know, how is that going to benefit you?" And I only accept, my business, I only accept wired funds, because I was a compliance officer as well as, you know, an institutional equities trader. And I tell people I only do the wired funds because the financial institution that's sending the money has done the KYC, the Know Your Customer, they've done the anti-money laundering. If I have to do all that, you know, there's paperwork and all sorts of other things that I don't want to do, and then I'm at risk for things. And they go, "What happens if I wire money? The bank, the Treasury is going to find out. The IRS, they're going to be after me." I said, "No. The only way they're going to find out is if you have suspicious activity, then they have to file an SAR, suspicious activity report. I believe the threshold is $10,000 if you move currency. So if you go into the bank and say, "Here's $10,000 in cash," they're going to flag that. They've got to report that. Let's say you send $10,000 in a wire. They don't care. It goes in a drawer. Doesn't go anywhere, again, unless there's suspicious activity. And I've confirmed this with one of my customers who's actually the anti-money laundering person for a major bank on the East Coast of the United States. So they don't have to worry about that. No one's going to flag it. And what we specialize in is what's called bullion. Bullion is your basic bars and coins, because that's really all you need. I mean, there's commemorative or things or numismatic fancy coins that have an intrinsic value. And you don't know what that intrinsic value is going to be in the future, because you're just looking for your basic gold or silver. And the American Eagle is a coin that's minted, you know, by the U.S. government, and that has some intrinsic value in it because it's American Eagle. It's printed by the U.S. It's, you know, minted by the U.S. government. But that intrinsic value above the basic value of the metal changes depending on supply, demand, and et cetera. There was maybe 2 months ago, month and a half ago, the premium over your basic, let's say, bar was about $6. Then it jumped to $14. Now it's about $10. And I tell people, you know, I don't base my profit margin on a particular product. I don't push a particular product on it. So I don't care what you get. I just go by dollar amount. Are you investing $5,000, $10,000, $100,000, million, whatever it is? That's where I make my profit margin. So that takes away a lot of bias. I mean, I've worked for companies before I started my own where there'd be literally 40 to 60% markups. I mean, I'm nowhere near that. And I spoke to one of my colleagues and I said, I looked him right at him. I said, how do people make money? He looked at me, very matter of fact, said, they don't. And I went, whoa. I said, I come from a regulated industry. I said, that is not the way it works. So that's something that I look at. And I don't know if any of you guys look at the Healthy and Free signal chat, but I look at it every now and then. And somebody posted something a few days ago about a company, I won't mention the name, that saying, well, if you want to get out of the current economy and go like to the parallel economy and do gold, silver, go to this company. And I looked at it, and it's multi-level marketing company. And, you know, so the person that's posting, look at that video. Well, yeah, they're probably some senior associate. And then you've got the other level. And then I looked at the products they have, and a lot of them were commemorative coins. And who knows what the markup is on those. And, you know, I had direct messaged the person that posted it, never heard from them. You know, and I said, look, let me tell you the pluses and the minuses of this. I didn't say that the sucks or it's MLM or whatever. And never heard from them. Either they blocked me or they just didn't feel like responding to me. So that's why we just do the basic bars and coins. We can also do, there's two ways to purchase precious metals. One's what we call the cash buy, which is the wired funds. You send it in and the metals get sent directly to you and by UPS, a nondescript package. The driver doesn't even know what's in it. I pay the shipping and insurance, and you get the tracking number. So it's all right there. And the wholesalers that I work with, they've been around for decades. They're family-owned, and it's all going to be real metals. I had an experience about 2-3 weeks ago. A woman said, you know, I took this coin that you sent me. It's called a silver round. Silver round is made by a private mint, not the government mint, but it's still 1 troy ounce of silver, and it has, you know, like an American Eagle, not American Eagle, it has a buffalo on it or American Indian. So I took it to my jeweler. My jeweler says, this is silver plated. I said, no, it's not. Take it to, you know, a coin shop. Don't just take it to your jeweler. And, you know, she's a good customer. She's a repeat customer, and I spoke with her. She knows I'm with her. I said, you know, check it out and let me know, because if there's something wrong, I mean, I've got to go back to these people. And she went to a coin shop, and it was all fine. So that happens. And another story with the wired funds. So the banks are getting more particular because you see the name of my company and they go, I haven't been around for 20 years. And they go, this is a scam. This guy's fraud. He's going to take your money. And a lot of the banks, even like my minimum's $2,000 because my average transaction was a lot higher than that. But I'll sometimes do $2,000. And I do that because, especially in California, if a purchase is less than $1,500, sales tax has to be charged. And that's another thing I don't have the infrastructure for. So I go $2,000, so you have, you know, $1,500, and maybe the laws change. So I do that as a cushion. Other states also charge sales tax. So I had one customer, it was a little over a year ago. She's in a bank in Indiana. She goes, well, I'm going to wire $35,000 to this company because I want to buy precious metals from them. So they said, no, we're not sending it. This is a scam. This is a fraud. You know, we're not sending it. She goes, it's my money. I want to send the wire. They said, no. She goes, all right, you know what? I'm closing my account. I want $35,000 in cash right now. So they closed the account. They gave her the money. She almost literally went across the street to another bank, deposited the $35,000, and they sent the wire, and she bought her metals. So it's a crazy world out there. The banks know what's going on, and they're being a lot more restrictive on how the money is going out, even though it's your money. So it's already starting, and that's something that in here we've spoken about, and you know you've heard about that as well. So that's kind of the overview. I think I covered the topics. I've got a lot more to say, but I really respond well to questions, and then I can open that up. So speak up, please. Let's have your questions, and away we go. Thank you. Thank you. Anyone? Bueller?
Ira, thanks for coming today.
You're welcome.
I bought some silver about 15 years ago. And when I bought it, I noticed that all the pawn shops, all the advertising on the internet and television was, "We buy gold, we buy gold." They all said that. And so I bought some silver because I couldn't afford the gold. And I paid something like close to $40 an ounce.
Whoa.
Yeah. And now, right. Today, some 15 years later, what is it? Like $23 an ounce, something like that.
Yes.
And all throughout that time period, I was watching it to see if it would go up or down. And I missed some time periods in there, but it seems to me that it hasn't done anything for a long time. Could you give me some advice as far as when to listen and when not to listen to the guys that are saying, you know, it's a great time to invest in gold and silver?
Oh, sure. It's always a great time. Yeah, so I don't give advice because I'm not a financial advisor, but I can give suggestions. Silver, and I did want to touch upon, John, before you ask the question, I want to touch upon another topic that I missed to talk about. Silver is a different kind of animal. So the all-time high for silver was 50, which it hit twice, 1980 and I think 2011. And then it's gone down below that. You know, it was $5, and then it went up to 50, and then it's down again. The cost of production for silver is around $19 or $20. And I've been telling my customers last month or so, as it's been hovering around that level, I mean, I can't guarantee anything that it's going to go below that, but it makes sense it's going to find a bottom there, which it kind of did, around $18, $20, and it's going a little higher. Silver is an industrial metal more than gold is. Why it's down? Potentially manipulation, you know, JP Morgan or whomever. So I can't speak too much of it. I talk to my colleagues and people, you know, shrug their shoulders. Now is actually probably a good time to get in, because one of the other things to look at is the gold-silver ratio. How many ounces of silver does it take to buy 1 ounce of gold? Historically, it's maybe 50. When it gets above 90 or near 90 and above, it's when silver usually pops. Okay, a couple of months, maybe a month ago, it was 77 or so. Then it popped up to the high 80s, now it's about 83, and silver jumped, has been up 15% or something. So, sorry you bought it back then. Now's a much better time. Maybe you want to average down, right? People always, you're supposed to average up, but maybe you want to average down.
But
gold, you know, gold's more stable. I compare gold to the Dow Jones stocks in terms of volatility only, and silver to the NASDAQ stocks. Silver can move literally 3, 4, 5, 6% or more in a day, which it's done actually a few times in the last couple of weeks. Gold, not so much, doesn't move that much. And gold is more central banks and a lot of people, China, India, you know, they're buying it. So so silver now is, what, 70% off its all-time high? Gold is maybe, what, 15% off its all-time high? I see, you know, good things for gold. Silver, again, I've been bouncing off of the low here, yes. So not to use a cliche anything, but yes, now is a good time to get into the metals. And I'll get into that in a moment as well if you want to hang out. So, yeah, I'll tell you why. So we talk about manipulation. We talk about Janet Yellen. This is another topic I wanted to touch upon. So in the short term, governments can move markets. In the longer term, they can't, because the market is bigger than the government. Think George Soros, Bank of England, 1992, broke the Bank of England. I know we don't like George Soros, but that's what he did. So a year and a half ago, the summer of, 21, you had two bills pending in Congress, the Build Back Better bill and the infrastructure bill, right? Gold was maybe about $1,800 an ounce on the spot price. Then it starts drifting down, right, to like $1,600. It starts drifting down a couple of $100 while these bills are pending. So what happened? The Build Back Better bill died. The infrastructure bill passed. What happened within a month? Gold pops $200. Aha, right? Okay, history, here we go again. This past summer, what happened? You had the midterms coming up. You had, you know, some other things going on, like Joe Manchin and that inflation thing, right? So what happened? Janet Yellen. Gold drifts down about $200 an ounce, right? This inflation bill passes. The midterms pass. Boom! Gold jumps now almost $200 an ounce. So you can draw your own conclusions from that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, John, I don't have to take an oath. So you don't have to go that route. You can go any other route. The answer is no.
No, I know that. You're not a public servant. You have a business.
Yes.
Okay, very good. That's the defining moment, whether yes, you're in office is. Or not. You're not in office. I'm going to commend you on putting a very, very good talk together in such a short amount of time. I'd even like to see that written up to refer to, almost like a little pamphlet. It'd be very, very good.
Thank you. That's very kind of you.
Okay. I do have one contradiction. You said that the Federal Reserve prints money. Congress has never, ever had the power to print money.
Correct.
And they still don't.
Correct.
It's all debt instruments.
Correct. And also, they just press the button on the computer thing, and they do whatever they're going to do. You're correct.
Yeah.
So printing, that's kind of, put it in quotes.
Right.
Yeah.
They print debt instruments. I even had this conversation with a professor in England when I was there 3 years ago.
Thank you for the clarification.
Okay. Yeah, you're welcome.
Very much. Hello, Charles.
Hey, hi, Ira. Mm-hmm. So I want to ask two questions. I hope that'll be okay.
Ask three, ask four. It's okay with me. I mean, there's
one's
no real
historical, and it's kind of, I want to just see what you say about this now.
Sure.
Has Congress ever defined what a dollar is?
Yes.
I'm asking him.
Not my area. Seriously, okay. not my area.
Okay, I just maybe you might know. I'm just having an argument
Great
with
question,
somebody
though.
About this question. I know they have, but I just wanted to see.
Yeah. Not my area.
Okay, my question for you then really specifically is, all right, so let's say this is hypothetical, that I'm spending $100,000 buying a variety of gold and silver, and I'm going through somebody who is going to keep them in like a bank for me. Is that really safe? I mean, shouldn't I have it in my own home?
Well,
what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, don't those things are out there. I think I was mentioning this. Maybe I didn't mention it. If I did, you mentioned this. There's two ways to purchase metals. I think I mentioned one's what we call the cash buy. That's where you get the metals. It goes right to your home. The other is or your office, wherever. The other is you can actually roll over part of an eligible retirement account, 401k, IRA, 403b, et cetera. Then it goes to the metals. So then you get a self-directed IRA custodian. So even let's say you're with Schwab now. The money would get transferred out. I work with three self-directed IRA custodians, and you can choose either one. There's one I like the best. But then the metals, by IRS rules, need to be stored at a third-party depository, such as a Brinks or someone else. I work with three of them as well. And the self-directed IRA custodians I work with, they all get flat rates for them. It's really, really good. So people say, well, I don't want to have it stored away from me. And I had one customer, he bought like 330,000 of American Eagle gold coins. And he was working with some bank or something or some entity in Colorado that said, well, you can do home storage. We'll set you up with your own LLC, etc. Right? So we did that. And after he bought the metals through me, and fine, I don't care where it goes. That's not my business. And then the IRS came out with one of their not statement letters, whatever, letters of something. And it said, we really frown upon the home storage thing. So he called me up and I set him up with one of the depositories, and he shifted the metals to the depository. So, so I don't know if I answered your question, but I want to cover that.
Did, but now, are they those depositories? Are they safe? How could I access, get my actual physical silver?
It's amazing. So ones I work with, they have locations everywhere: from Los Angeles, Nevada, Delaware, Texas, and each of the depositories separately and uniquely are insured for $1 billion by Lloyd's of London, and I've never heard ever of years and years and years of any depository having a problem. I mean, they've got to be better than Fort Knox in terms of security. And I even heard, what's gone on the last couple of years. I don't know how it's changed, but you can actually visit your metals. You can actually go and I don't think you can bring a cell phone in there or anything. So if it's through a retirement account, the moment you take those metals out of that depository, it's a distribution. And if any taxes, penalties, whatever interest applies, that's between you and your tax advisor. If it's storage where you stored it and it's outside the retirement account, you go there, you say, I want my metals. Maybe they ship it. Maybe you go there, pick it up, however. So never heard of any problem over decades. And one out of the three, I work with three depositories. One's family owned, the other two are corporate owned. One's Brink, so that's corporate owned. The other one's kind of corporate owned, but it's never any problems with that. So not to worry. Hi there, Ben.
Hey, what's up? So I guess call me Black Belt, but gold is heavy. Metals are heavy. What are you going to do? The only reason why it's valuable is because people consider it valuable. You don't need it. So what would you say other than my classic three, whiskey, cigarettes, and what was the other one? I forgot. Ammo, excuse me. Other than those three things, what do you think are better vehicles to put your money in? Because, like I said, you can't really carry gold. You can't eat it. I mean, we use it in computers, but...
Well, you can't. I mean, people think, they see a picture of a gold bar. They think, oh, my gosh, a gold bar. Look at that thing. It's so big. It's so heavy. But that's probably like a kilo, which is 32 ounces or more. Think of an ounce, right? An ounce of gold. Let's say it's $2,000, right? An ounce of gold. It fits in the palm of your hand, right? It's an ounce. To get the equivalent of silver, you have to do like 77 or 80 of those. So that's a little different. But gold, it's a little wafer. It fits in the palm of your hand. So in terms of other things, I work with people and they go, be a prepper, and if you want to use that word, get food, ammo, guns. But I'm a metals guy, so that's what I know of. In terms of crypto or anything like that, again, not my area. But one of the things with crypto, not to say whether good or bad, it's on a server. Right, it can get hacked, which we've known what happened lately. So it's not in your physical possession, or it's not in a depository. It's in a thing, and I don't know if you guys saw this article. There's a guy in Lebanon who has throughout the country computers or whatever that are printing crypto or something, and what do they call it? Minting. He's minting crypto or something. I don't know about... Isn't there like a set thing? I mean, can you just say I'm creating this, this Bitcoin, and, I'm going to print a whole bunch of them. I've got my server here in Pasadena, and there we go. I don't know how that works. And, with stocks, people go, well, I can do stocks or something. I'll say, well, take 9/11, right? Okay. Well, I got stocks. I want my money. Well, the stock market was closed for 4 days. How are you going to get your money, right? But you go, I got physical metals. And a lot of people I mentioned the silver round, a lot of people using that for barter. If everything goes in the handbasket, what do I do? Well, you can get, the silver round. It's 1 troy ounce of silver. And I don't know how other people are going to react. You say, this thing is worth, $30. Wash my car. And I don't know if they're accepting that. That's wonderful. And the one thing kind of, want to say the downside of the American Eagle, let's say the silver American Eagle has a face value of $1 on it. The gold one, the 1 ounce gold one, has $50 face value. So if you go, I've got this American Eagle coin and it's worth $35, $40, and wash my car. the face value is a dollar. I'm going to give you a dollar for it, you know?
Ah.
And then there's something called junk silver. It's not really junk silver. It's pre-1965 silver, because then it was, was it 90% silver, and each coin had like 0.71 ounces of silver in it. And again, you know, I have this dime that's actually worth 16 cents. No, it's a dime. You know? So that, with bartering, that's what you might run into. But the last 3 to 6 months, I mean, these silver rounds have been, I've been flying out the window. I mean, I've been selling literally thousands, if not tens of thousands of them, because people are concerned. And you're worried about, well, what do we do? What do we use? They're using that for barter. They're buying thousands of them at a time, thousands of dollars worth at a time. So talking about what do you use for barter, I mean, that's what people are storing up on right now. Next.
Hi, I'm wondering if you've ever heard of other currencies being created by individuals. There was one called the Liberty Bucks that was developed for a while, and he backed all his notes with actual gold and silver. And there's also in the Berkshires, there's Berkshire Bucks, which are not dollars, but it's paper money that they created themselves. I'm wondering if you've ever heard about that, and what are your thoughts on that?
I've heard of it. I haven't delved into it too much. But when we talked before about the parallel economy, that will work. If people, it's all acceptance. If people will accept it, it'll work. And there's nothing wrong with it. When something says, "Oh, this is backed by gold or silver," you know, okay, where is that? What's the access to it? You know, it's very easy to say that. So I don't have either way to say on that. Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Oh, another topic that I missed, that I was one of these bigger topics, was how different asset classes and things interact with each other, currencies and economies and things. And one thing I've been telling my customers is, like, the U.S. dollar recently was at a 20-year high, and that weighs on gold, especially because when the dollar's interest rates go up, usually the dollars go up because they're very much related one to one. And when the dollar is up, when interest rates are up, the carrying cost, if you would, will, of gold goes up, because people that actually own it, or the producers, the commercials, it's a higher cost for them that weighs on it a little bit. And what I've been telling my customers is the high dollar cannot be sustained. It can't. Why can't it be sustained? Because you've got these Fortune 500 companies, Johnson & Johnson and all these others. Because when our currency is stronger than currencies overseas, it takes more of the weaker currency, the other currency, to buy our products. And there's reluctant to buy our products. So you've got a lot of companies that a major part of their revenue, their profits, come from overseas. And if the dollar is too strong, their profits are going to go down. They're not going to be happy. So that's why the dollar, you see in the last month or so, has started to decline. Dollar's declining. Also, the metals are going up. So it's all interrelated. The asset classes are all interrelated. Yes, sir.
Hi. So you mentioned the American Eagle silver dollars. What about other sovereign silver dollars, like the Canadian Maple mm-hmm. Leaf or the Australian? What's your feelings on those different ones? Are they as well to hold those as well, or do you just say the American ones? What's your thoughts on the other ones?
They're all fine. You know, they're all one troy ounce of silver. It's all personal preference. You know, you can get the Austrian Philharmonic. You can get the Canadian Maple Leaf, the British Britannia. People like the American Eagle because it's American Eagle, you know, and they're right. They're willing to pay the premium for that. The Maple Leaf is less than that. I tell people, you know, especially if they're going to put it in a retirement account, they're not going to hold it. They're not going to look at it. So get a bar. That's all. You just want the one ounce. And it's interesting. People will say, what's the fineness of the American Eagle? Here's something, you know, you might read about. Well, is it 0.999?
No, it's not. It's 0.912 or something. Well, why? Well, I'm not getting all the gold. Let's say it's a gold American Eagle coin. You are. It's just heavier than, let's say, a round. Why? Because the government feels that the coin is going to be handled a lot, and the gold is a very soft metal. So if it's not shored up with other alloys, it's going to bend or whatever, chip or whatever it's going to do. So the fineness, if you will, you know, people like jewelry, what, 12 carat, 24 carat, and I don't understand that too much, but the fineness is like 0.91 something, but you're still getting one troy ounce of metal, gold or silver. I wanted to touch upon that too. See, this is what I love about Q&A, because it stokes my mind, because I miss a lot of the topics. Yes?
So, yes. Just kind of a funny topic, but I am aware of a lot of gold in Los Angeles. On the top of the Mormon temple is a statue of Moroni, and it's plated with gold. So I was wondering if you know anybody that has a helicopter that we could team up with, and we could just grab that and abscond with it. Just kidding.
I'll talk to you. I'll talk to you offline about that.
Yeah, just kidding.
I have no idea.
But I've heard that the Federal Reserve and the big banks and like Fort Knox is empty. But I don't know if there's any truth to the rumors or not. Maybe you know something about that.
Oh, conspiracy theory. Another one that's probably true. I have no idea. I have no idea. It could very well be. In the basement of the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, I don't know how many floors down, 12 or whatever, is a big storage of gold down in New York City in Manhattan.
I'm wondering also if you knew that on 9/11 there were vaults underneath the World Trade Centers that had a lot of gold. And there were armored cars going in and removing that gold a little bit before and during when the towers were on fire.
I don't know about that per se, but that makes a lot of sense for two reasons. One is whatever the 9/11 thing is that you would talk about makes sense. And the other is the commodity exchange was right there. The New York Mercantile Exchange was right there. So it would make sense that they'd be storing gold there because that's where the Mercantile Exchange was. So that could be like the legitimate reason. And then, you know, there could be the other reason that, you know, would fit more what you're talking about.
So let me ask you this. Are you basically, in a nutshell, saying that when we're dealing with, you know, massive inflation and the dollar is going down, that in order to survive that, a good strategy would be to purchase a chunk of precious metals?
I wouldn't use the word survive. I would use the word diversification. It's definitely beneficial. There are studies done that to have a certain portion of your investment portfolio in metals has proven itself over time. And then what that mix is, whether it's gold or silver, that all depends on your own personal circumstances. But absolutely buy metals. And I've always been I've owned gold since 1969, silver since 1995. So, yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So other than going to your childhood coin collection, how should
I'm
one,
older than you think.
Yeah. How should one get like actually started? And like me personally, I don't know what I would, you know, would do with it, if anything, if I would need it. That's why I guess I'm so skeptical of going with metals.
Well, there's no return on it. There's no interest rate, you know, you receive. It's not like a CD or something like that. But again, it's diversification, and depends what your other assets are, or just to hold it. I mean, people have held it for years. One person I know bought silver when it was $3, $4, $5, whatever it was, and when it got into the $20s, $30, they must have had a ton because they cashed it in for a down payment on a house. So, you know, that that's always always something. And I was going to add something else to that, but I forgot when you were talking about that. Ask the question again, and I'll remember. To own metals. Yeah. Go ahead. What else?
I guess one use for metals is, you know, like jewelry and stuff like that. They have certain like TV shows where people like they flee and they take all their jewels with them, and it's like mm-hmm. like all their wealth and stuff like that. But more realistically, like other than computers, like what's like one of the best things that you could do with like these precious metals so you could actually actually like use the stuff?
Well, I mean, it's really not. People, you know, use it for their investment portfolio. Other people buy it, as you say, for jewelry or for others to make coins. And it's all personal preference. So you can buy a little bar of gold, you know, and melt it down, you know, for something. So it's metals. That's what they do. And one thing I want to touch on, people will say like the spot price. That's something you'll see on Kitco, Yahoo Finance, or wherever you look at it. And people go, well, I want to buy it at the spot price. And I say, you know what? I want to buy it at the spot price. But I can't, because the spot price has two main purposes. One is it's where the miners and the producers, the miners and the refiners meet, because they've got to meet somewhere. So they meet at that price, whether it's up, down, wherever it is. Then the refiners sell it to the wholesalers. The wholesalers sell it to me, and then I sell it to you. And the direct comparison is when you buy a can of vegetable soup at the store. There's the producers, which are the vegetable growers. They sell it to Campbell Soup. Campbell Soup is the refiner, if you will. They make the soup. And then they sell it to a food broker. Food broker sells it to Ralph's, and then Ralph sells it to you. So it's all the same thing. The other purpose of the spot price is for the futures markets, because you have to have delivery, right? So you have gold futures, silver futures, platinum, palladium, which are also out there, which I don't do a lot of business in. I haven't done any business in them because people, you know, would rather go with the gold and silver. So that's, you know, for delivery, you've got to have something. And then people ask, what about confiscation? In 1933, Franklin Roosevelt, you know, President Roosevelt took, you know, the gold from people and stuff. And I go, well, two reasons why that's not going to happen. And I say, not, it's anything is possible. It's not probable. And there's two reasons for that. Number one, you've got a lot of the exchange-traded funds, things like that, which State Street Bank and the other ones offer. They make a lot of money off of those fees. So if there's no metals underneath for them to store somewhere to back these funds, you know, mutual funds, whatever, then they're going to be out of business. So State Street and Wells Fargo, all those other, they're going to be upset. So that's put that on the side. And secondly, you know, as I mentioned, you've got the spot price, and the spot price is based on something. So there's got to be physical delivery as well. Again, the futures markets, it's got to be delivery. So if there's no metals, there's no delivery. And the third reason is, in the old days back then, you know, there were no futures markets, but the storage was pretty much here domestically. Now there's storage in the United States, there's storage in Canada, there's storage in London, there's storage in Zurich. You know, good luck trying to confiscate all of that. So, you know, that's anything's possible. It's really, really not probable. And I really think you'd have riots then. Just a guess. Yes, sir.
Where in Zurich? I've been there.
I don't know.
Okay.
I can tell you where Brink's stores it in L.A. They store it on South Soto Street. 1821 South Soto Street. That's on video. That's public knowledge. That's no secret.
Yeah. Do you have any pre-1965 silver dollars?
I think I've got an 1883 gold piece. I don't know if I have any pre-65 silver.
Yeah. What are you selling them for?
No, I don't have them.
Oh, you don't?
I said I don't have them. Okay. I said I might have one, like an 1883 gold piece or something, but I don't. I do have one of my suppliers who specializes in the pre-33 metals, and you know, they probably specialize in something like that. So it's not something I usually deal with, but I can source it or attempt to source it for someone who has an interest in something like that.
Okay, yeah, I do. And commend you again. Hardly anybody talks. They always talk about possibilities, but they never separate that and talk about the probability factor. Mm-hmm. You did.
Thank you.
I guess another semi-black pill question. by using, you know, metals to like secure and and stabilize, I guess, our wealth of, you know, since obviously our fiat currency is terrible. Aren't we just supporting all these big giant banks and all these other, black institutions that, are pulling all the strings on us?
Well, if you don't like a fiat currency, get a Chevrolet. Now. So you're quite, so if you buy precious metals, you feel you're supporting banks? Did I get it right?
Well, I mean, in a sense, like, for example, I guess Lloyd's of London sounds pretty, upper crusty and stuff like that, and they probably are associated with the Rothschilds and all that other stuff. So, I mean, considering that the credit unions, they're probably, like, bought off, too, and all that stuff. This is supposed to be more community-centered, for example.
Great question. I really don't know how to answer that. I don't know, because everything is intertwined so much. And a lot of people, a lot of my customers have credit unions. I mean, I'm really surprised getting wired funds from credit unions, more so than banks, and a lot of more regional banks. Not, I don't really get like the Bank of America or things like that. Not so much anymore. So I believe people are moving the money as just as what you're talking about. So I don't know if I answered your question.
I think as well as one could. I was just looking for some inside information. Maybe it's in your brain somewhere. I don't know.
Inside information. Nope. No. Like people say, where do I put my money? I go, put it in your mattress or something. I go, where do I put my gold? People that have the gold at home or silver at home, the metals at home, they'll put it in a gun safe. They'll put it in, regular safe. One guy says, I've got my safe, cemented to the floor of my garage and things. And okay. And I go, put it in a sock in your freezer. But that's the first place they're going to look, right?
I did that one time when somebody came to visit
me. See?
They took my credit cards and they used those in Sweden.
Wow. So,
Not
at all. The storage.
I didn't want to spend, so I said, okay, I'll just forget it.
But remember, if it's not silver, let's say it's gold, 1 ounce of gold is a wafer that fits in your hand. It's not a big thing. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Got a question.
Great.
And that is the gold to silver ratio you mentioned.
Yeah.
To take advantage of that, you might want to swap some gold for silver. So what is the process of doing that, and what are the premiums involved in doing that?
Well, so you're looking to a metals-to-metals exchange is what we call it in the industry, in the business. And I do that for people that have purchased through me, because if someone purchases through me, of course, I have a markup, and that's my profit. If they're going to do a swap like that or just want to sell metals directly to me, I give them whatever the wholesaler gives me. I don't make any money on the back end, so I don't double dip, if you will. It's only just on the front end. You can go to a coin shop on the corner and do that. And swap it. That's probably the best thing. Like I said, for me, it would be thousands of dollars even for me to worthwhile even to do it, because I know you, because it has to be shipped and insured, because I would get it and then I don't do it personally. I mean, I'd have to ship it to my wholesaler. And as I tell people, if you're going to do that route, I haven't done that route yet. I had one customer about 2 months ago, his daughter was getting married, and he wanted to cash in some of his retirement account metals. So I had to do that through the depository and through the custodian. So that was easy. But if someone's actually going to ship metals to me and it's insured, I'd have it shipped to UPS. But once it got there, I mean, I'd have the mailing label that's going to go to the wholesaler. I'd have that already made, because if the box came to me, I'd look at it, sign for it, boom, I'd slap the label right on it, because once I touch it, it's my responsibility. So that's why I really don't do that. I haven't done that yet. Believe it or not, all the years in the business, I haven't done that yet. But I'd probably just have them ship it direct to the wholesaler.
Yeah, but so the customer wouldn't be paying premiums for both... in both directions is what I was asking. Yeah.
So with me, no.
Okay.
With others, I don't know. But there's a bid and ask. It's an asset. It's like a stock has a bid and ask price.
Right.
Everything is a bid and ask. And so let's say the spot price is X. I have the wholesalers I work with for the basic bullion, they'll pay a little bit more than the spot price, and then of course they'll charge more to buy it. And so there'll be a little spread there. But you'll probably get the market rate, you know, whatever it is. And then if you go to purchase new stuff, then that's where, like for me, that's where I would make my money on that part.
Right. Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. I was going to say something else, but then it went out of my head again. About repurchasing. Oh, whatever. Yes, sir. This is fun.
Okay, so
until I get a tough question.
Yeah, I know, right? So for me, like I said, I got a childhood coin collection. What should young people be looking to do first with metals? Mm-hmm. Maybe they have, you know, like $2,000 and they want to do something with it. What should they be doing?
I don't know if you heard this part of my presentation. I said, I always put it back on the customer. I say, what are your goals and aspirations? What is your holding period? What is your risk level? Why metals? What are you doing that for? So if someone's in their 20s, I would suggest to them a different mix than somebody in their 60s. I would. Like somebody in their 20s, I'd probably go do mostly silver instead of mostly gold, because silver, you know, of where it is, it's the price level, and there's the potential for it to move up, and you're probably looking for something that is a little more has a little price volatility in it. So that's what I would suggest. And people sometimes listen to me, sometimes they don't, which is fine. Like I had one couple in their 60s. You know, what should we do? I said, well, you're in your 60s, your age, you know, probably 90% gold, 10% silver. You can still get that goose or that upside, you know, with that 10% of silver. It's not a large part of your portfolio, your metals portfolio. So if it goes down a little bit, it's not going to hurt your portfolio too much. If it goes up, you know, you get that extra. And they said, great, thank you. We'll do 100% silver. Like, okay. Yes, sir.
Have you said everything you wanted to say about cryptocurrency?
Most likely, because I'm not very familiar with it at all, and I have no up positive or negative to it. You know, I don't know. I don't deal with it. So, yes, I've said pretty much what I want to say. Like Billy Joel, right? People go, well, how come you ever haven't written more? He goes, I've said what I want to say. Because Elton John told him, he said, Elton, you're not Elton, Billy, you know, I haven't written anything for like 20 years. He goes, well, I've said what I want to say. So that's what he said. That's what he told him. And then he went to Elton John and said, you know, stop making so many records. Something like that. Anybody else? Yes. Yes, young lady.
Boy, I love being called a young lady since I'm 70 now. Thanks. So kind of embarrassing to have to say this, but I don't have $1,500. I'm thinking, well, maybe I could go together with a couple of my friends and put together $1,500 and buy some metals. Is that something that people can do?
Ah, great question. Oh, and that'll tag me into something else that I wanted to say. I have competitors, and I will say I'm not the least expensive, but I'm somewhere in there. There are some online companies where you can buy $100 worth of metals. You know, whether you pay sales tax or not, or delivery, you know, that's up to them. So I do have competitors. But one of the things that I tell people, you know, I've got, you know, 42 years of experience, and maybe I might charge a few percentage points more than other companies, but you're getting 42 years of experience, and you're getting a lot of what I talked about with the history of the stock market, their history of metals, and that's invaluable. I mean, people make money off of that. And what I tell them, because when I started in the stock market back in 1980, the spread was 12.5 cents. That was the, because remember, it was an eighth, right? Spanish galleons or whatever it was an eighth of a point, 12.5 cents. And remember, when the Dow was like 800 or 1,000, you didn't have $500 stocks back then. They were $30, whatever it was. So 12.5 cents was really a big spread. It was a significant amount of money. And people ask me now, well, do I wait? I want to wait till the price drops a little bit or something. You know what I tell them? I go, don't let an eighth get in your way. Because that's what we used to say on the trading desk. Don't let an eighth get in your way. And now, you know, the spread on stocks is a penny. But and they'll say, you're right. You know, because I don't know if it's going down or up. I said the crystal ball's in the drawer. All I know is over time, it's proven itself. The metals, you know, silver, not so much, Adam. But gold, yes. For sure, yeah. Does that help?
Kind of.
Next up. Come on. There's got to be another one.
Come on, come on, come on.
Wow. Well, I've only been up here for a little over an hour. Wow, that's cool. This is fun. Yes.
So, I guess in your opinion, what would be the best thing to do with silver? And then what would be the best thing to do with gold if gold's more stable and silver's more volatile? I feel like gold would be better to have it kept off-site, and since silver is not as valuable, you just, you like you said, you can trade and barter with the silver, but that's...
You've answered the question for me.
Oh.
So great, thanks. Yes, you can do that. It all depends what you want to do, what personal... I always put it back on the people, you know, personal preference. You know, my approach is, as you can tell, the way I'm talking with you now is the way I talk to my customers and my leads and my prospects. It's the same way. And I told someone once, I said, I talk to them like I'm in someone's living room. And they go, how do you do that? I go, nice couch. You know, I mean, that's, yeah. But I just talk to you, the way I'm talking to you now, yeah. if you came into me as a prospect or a lead, I talk with you then just the way I'm talking with you now. Just, we have a discussion, we see what works for you, what doesn't work for you, and people, you know, my colleagues, say, you know, my people I know in the industry, well, you know, you're not so aggressive, you're not do this. I go, well, yeah, I want to sleep at night. You know, this is people's investments. This is, they're looking for unbiased opinion, and that's what I do. What else?
Well, what's your website? How can we find you? You got a card? Yeah, and all that stuff.
No,
yeah.
I don't have a card. Name of my company is Advisor Metals, Advisor Singular, Metals Plural, AdvisorMetals.com. My email is ira@advisormetals.com. And phone number for the business is 626-788-5770. And sometimes when I call you, it might come up as spam or something like that. But answer the phone because it's a real number. It's me. Yes, sir.
You're hired.
Thank you. John, coming from you, that is such a compliment. You don't know. You don't know how great a compliment that is. I'm crying. That's how great a compliment it is.
All right. Well, thank you, Ira.
Thank you.
All right. So thanks a lot, Ira, for giving us that talk. And be sure to check out advisormetals.com. So we're going to open it up for an open mic period here for anyone that wants to rant and rave or just chat about something. The mic is yours. So come on up.